May it please the court, I'm Doug Sprong. I represent the appellants. I apologize. I was right in the attorney's room next door. I was told I was number four, and I should have been here. I apologize.
You became number three by mysterious manipulation.
Okay.
Docket. No, go ahead.
Certainly. This case involves the MMC profit sharing plan. My clients were participants in the MMC profit sharing plan. MMC was Mormon Manufacturing Company, a soybean processor in Quincy, Illinois. ADM purchased MMC through a stock transfer, and immediately upon purchasing MMC, in fact, even before the purchase, the ADM people knew they were going to terminate the MMC profit sharing plan and knew they were going to distribute the assets in the MMC profit sharing plan to the participants, and knew that that would take approximately a year. It ended up taking a full 18 months, but they knew at the time of the merger that it was going that they were going to have a very short investment horizon to manage the assets in the plan. Instead of looking at that investment horizon and making a decision about the prudence of having two-thirds of the money in the plan invested in the employer security, the testimony in the district court at deposition was that they did nothing. They did not go through an analysis of the short-term investment window. The actually, the CFO of
now, at the end of the 18 months, whenever the plan closed, these people, if they were still employed by ADM, they would then become part of another, you know, profit sharing plan.
I believe they became part of the ADM ESOP. So
they would continue receiving ADM stock.
Yes.
Right. Well, so why isn't this the situation where these people become employees of ADM by the merger, and so they start getting the ADM stock. It's put in their old plan, but, you know, they get the ADM stock in that plan. And then at the end of the 18 months, they move into the regular ADM plan. They continue getting ADM stock. So what's the difference? What's out of the ordinary? How is their position any different? Suppose someone, not any part of this Mormon company, had been hired at the same time as the merger, hired by ADM, but has nothing to do with Mormon. So he starts, you know, getting ADM stock, and then it falls over the 18-month period.
But presumably, he has a longer investment horizon than 18 months to recoup.
Well, no, but kind of these people, if they remain employees of ADM, their investment horizon is indefinite, is until retirement.
Right. The way I see it, though, that is shifting the burden of when is it prudent to abandon this huge holding in ADM stock away from the fiduciaries, who should have made a determination at the front end, and it shifted participants at the back end.
Suppose ADM, when it made the merger and hired these people, just took the fund and added it to the ordinary ADM ESOP fund. So these people would start off with a significant amount of ADM stock in their accounts. Would that be imprudent to do that?
You're talking about the participants who now have left MMC's employ and gone to work for ADM.
Right, as okay. Part of the merger, yeah.
Well, but in fact, that is what happened in some cases, in the sense that if you became an ADM employee, you could ask for a trust-to-trust transfer
right.
of your ADM stock now held in the MMC profit-sharing plan over into your ADM ESOP. ERISA allows trust-to-trust transfers of all types
right.
of retirement benefits. And I understand the question you're asking. The problem I see with that, my people would have been better off if the stock had been sold at the end of 97, and then the assets that were left at the end of this 18-month period, instead of having diminished by $40 million, gone up by 10 or 20, if that money had then been transferred into the ADM ESOP, they could have used that to purchase ADM shares at $15 a pop.
What if it had been a trust-to-trust transfer at the beginning? Would there have been any problem with that?
A trust-to-trust transfer at the beginning. Were participants who were eligible for a trust-to-trust transfer, and they had gotten it at that point in time, I mean, in other words, immediately, I hadn't thought about it in that way, so I'm thinking through it now. Initially that is not what happened in this case, in the sense that the focus of our case is the fact that the decision makers at ADM weren't making any decisions.
Well, are your clients and the class, are they people who are still working at ADM or left or mixed or what?
The three class representatives have all left. As I understand it, a large number of people left. The majority of the employees stayed on. I don't know. I don't believe there was evidence.
Is the class all of the former Mormon employees, or
yes,
just the ones who are still at ADM?
No, it's all of the former Mormon employees.
So your argument basically is that someone who came from Mormon but didn't stay with ADM was stuck with having all his stock in ADM, all his retirement or whatever, profit sharing. And that had been Mormon stock previously, or
yes,
what?
It was Mormon stock previously.
So he'd had Mormon stock, and
it also raises the issue of in this case, why continuing to hold ADM stock is not particularly on all fours with the purpose of the employer security exemption for profit-sharing plans and ESOPs, in the sense that the stock for years and years was MMC stock. It is then, through the magic of the merger, transformed into ADM stock.
That makes these people better off, doesn't it? Isn't ADM a solider company?
Hindsight would say no, in the sense that at the time of the merger, the value of the ADM stock was $21.20.
No, but ex ante, wouldn't you prefer, if you had all your eggs in one basket because it was an ESOP, wouldn't you prefer the eggs to be ADM than Mormon?
Well, in the sense that you have a market to sell your stock, and presumably a larger market is more efficient than a smaller one. Yes.
Oh, so it's a solider company, less bankruptcy risk.
I don't know that I can dispute that Mormon Manufacturing Company of Quincy,
right,
Illinois had the financial might of ADM.
I'm just curious, would the fiduciary's actions have been reasonable if the ADM stock had risen in value?
Well, we wouldn't be here today if it had, but I don't know that. I don't think it would have been reasonable. I think they would have been lucky in that sense. I think since we're talking about a short investment horizon and we're talking about retirement benefits, another distinction in this case than in a typical ESOP case, this plan, up until a last-minute amendment by ADM, you couldn't get a benefit until you turned 65. So the import and the thrust of the plan from the beginning was that it was going to provide retirement benefits. So if you go through the hypothetical, at the time of the merger, January 1, there's 12 months to go. The fiduciary has to make a decision about what he or she is going to do with these retirement benefits. To roll the dice as they did and leave them all in or leave two-thirds of it in ADM stock cannot be considered prudent.
Isn't there another retirement plan for them? Their only retirement plan, is it?
No, there was a defined benefit plan,
right,
for the MMC employees.
So this is sort of gravy, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not gravy. It's a legal entitlement. The employer did not have to sponsor a plan, but once it does sponsor a plan, it becomes
the entitlement
of the employer.
No, I understand, but when you talk about diversification, what you want to look at, ideally, you'd want to look at the whole range of interests and assets and opportunities and so on of the employee. So if he has Social Security entitlement and has a defined benefit plan, he would be willing to take a little more risk in his profit sharing plan, depending on, you know, relative amount of those assets.
Well,
is there anything
you can argue that two ways, in the sense that in a defined benefit plan, the employee is gambling to a certain extent that the company is going to be around long enough to make good on the promise to pay the annuity at 65, the normal retirement benefit.
No, but that's insured. It's insured by
well,
the pension and benefit
to a limited extent.
That right,
the PBGC doesn't do 100%.
Right.
So, and there are inherent delays and risks with
right.
handing yourself over to the PBGC.
Is there anything in the record about the relative size of the relative amount of the interest in this ESOP and their defined benefit?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think it's a really interesting academic question, but it steers us away again from what were these fiduciaries supposed to be doing in January 1 after the merger, and we contend that they one thing they couldn't do is what they did, which was nothing. No investigation, no consideration of the asset mix, no consideration of the short investment time horizon.
And what about the defendants argue that there would have been a tax hit if they had sold the Mormon stock or diversified?
What they've done is they're using the word hit to actually describe a potential advantage that any holder of stock has if he holds it for a long period of time, in the sense
right.
that the capital
right.
gains tax, at least currently, is below the ordinary income tax, and you're not taxed on whatever increases there are in the value of the stock.
Well, if the stock had been sold, what would have been the tax treatment? Would that have been capital gains? Or
not within the plan. Income? See, that's where their argument falls apart. If the plan had sold the stock, the plan is not taxed on investment income. There would have been a larger pool of money to distribute, and if that pool of money had been distributed into IRAs or even the ADM ESOP, that would have been a tax-free or tax-deferred transfer, and that money could then be used in the new investment vehicle to invest in ADM stock, if that's what the employees chose at that point, or to invest in some sort of fixed income security or something along those
You're
lines.
You're in your rebuttal time.
Pardon me?
You're into your rebuttal time. You can do it if you want.
I think I'll take a seat and save some time for
rebuttal. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Severson?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Steve Severson, and I'm representing the appellees, and with me at counsel's table is Aaron Van Oort. It won't come as a surprise to Your Honors that we believe the District Court got it right, that summary judgment was appropriately entered in this case. We say that for three reasons. The first is that the plan in this case, the Mormon plan, like all employer stock plans, is designed to invest in employer stock and to give employees an opportunity to have an ownership interest in their companies. That's what this plan did. The participants' theory is inconsistent with that. What they say is that when a plan, an employer stock plan, terminates, you must sell that stock.
But now, something had an ordinary ADM employee, if he quit, you know, the same time as the Mormon acquisition, so what would be his interest in the ESOP? Would that be something that would just sit there till he was 65, or what?
Okay, Your Honor, I just want to make sure I understand. We're talking about an ADM employee who is in the ADM ESOP.
Right.
Well, in that instance, that person participates in the ESOP and receives annually employer stock, holds that stock, and then at the time of retirement, I believe they have an election. That is, they have the right to take the stock in kind.
You mean at retirement age?
Yes.
65, because I'm assuming a person's left the company.
Okay. You're talking about, well, that would depend on the terms of the plan, and I will tell you that the specific terms of the ADM ESOP are not in the record. I believe that in that instance they would have a right to take distribution, but I don't know that for a fact.
But that's kind of important, isn't it? Because suppose you're an ADM guy, and you left, and you'd have your ADM stock, and if you were, you know, risk averse, you could sell it and create a diversified portfolio. But now these Mormon people, they come in, they're stuck for 18 months. They're frozen. So they don't have, so even if they've left the company, like these three people, they can't liquidate their interest. They have to wait till the end of the 18 months.
That would be correct, Your Honor. And what makes this a unique case, and I think a case that is very favorable to ADM in that regard, is that ADM provided by amendment of the plan, that is through settlor function, not through fiduciary decision, to allow the participants the ability to elect what they wanted to do with their ADM stock. Fully 40% transferred it to the ADM.
Before the 18 months, you mean?
Yes. They were given a distribution form. This is required by ERISA, and
they could just say, could they also just cash it out, or?
Yes, they could.
Then they'd pay the tax, though.
Well, it depends on how they took it. If they took it and transferred it to the ESOP, no tax consequence. If they took cash, tax consequence. If they took stock, then the tax consequence. I think it was adjusted.
Well, that would be taking ADM stock.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So I see. So you're saying that, let me get this straight, because I think it's important. You're saying, so if one of these Mormon people is risk averse at the beginning of the 18-month period, if he was leaving the company, he could take his share of the Mormon plan with him.
Absolutely. And I should say that what I'd like to come back to is what type of plan this is. This is an employer stock plan. And Congress has said and the courts have said this is not your typical ordinary pension plan. This does not guarantee a benefit at retirement. What this does is give the employees an opportunity to have an ownership interest in the company. So, as Your Honor noted, there were other retirement packages offered by the Mormon plan, including a 401k. In this instance, these folks were in employer stock. They would expect to receive employer stock. Congress intended that participants be given the opportunity to receive employer stock, and it is the receipt of the employer stock upon distribution that gets you the tax benefits that Congress provided, wherein you're taxed on the cost basis at the ordinary tax rate, and then the capital.
This is when you retire, you mean?
Actually, this.
Or whenever.
This came. Yes, it does come into effect when you retire, when you take that distribution.
When you get the distribution, you have it.
Right.
Why did, I'm puzzled by these ESOPs. I thought the ESOPs were vehicles for, you know, something like United Airlines was actually owned by, I think it's owned by the pension funds. But why did Congress want workers to be investing in their companies?
There was a judgment made by Congress that there is a social value in having employees have an ownership stake in their companies. One that comes to mind is the fact that employees who have an ownership stake in their companies might be more productive. The other is the social good of sharing the wealth. I think you'd have to go back and look at the legislative history, but I think that probably hits the two main ones. Mm-hmm. The plaintiffs have talked here about the short-term time horizon. We take issue with that. What we say is if you look at what the plaintiffs are saying, they have conceded in their opening statement in their motion for summary judgment that ADM was a prudent long-term investment. Their argument to your honors and to Judge Mills resides in this fact. They say that it was a shortened time horizon. We say no. We say that the time horizon is measured by the participants as a group, not by the plan. And that's because ERISA says fiduciaries, you invest for the benefit of participants, not the benefit of the plan independent of the participants. So in this instance, the fiduciaries had every right to carry out the terms of the plan. The terms of the plan said you will acquire and you will hold employer stock, and upon distribution you will give the opportunity to the participants to take their distribution in the form of stock. And that's what happened here. If you look at the participants, their age didn't change when the plan terminated. They were still, on average, 45 years of age, fully 20 years away from retirement. They still had an ownership interest in the company. At the time of the termination of the plan, or at the time of the transfer, the merger, everybody who was a Mormon employee became an ADM employee. And so at that point, these people had an interest that Congress anticipated in having an ownership interest in ADM stock. So we take exception to the short-term time horizon. We would submit to your honors, if you determine that, in fact, it is a long-term time horizon, then they have conceded that we win because it was an objectively prudent investment. There has also been a challenge in this case to the fiduciary's decision-making. First response to that is, it really doesn't matter. A fiduciary can get the right decision for the wrong reason. That is, you can fail in your decision-making process and still make an objectively prudent decision. And in this case, once there's a determination that the investment horizon is long-term, and it is objectively prudent. Now, having said that it is not relevant to the decision, I will tell you that we strongly disagree on that point. The fiduciaries did not have an obligation to sit around the table and debate whether or not they should be investing in a fixed income fund. And why is that? ERISA doesn't require fiduciaries to engage in meaningless exercises. If the fiduciaries were right in determining that the stock was a prudent long-term investment and it was in the best interest to provide that stock to the participants of distribution, then they don't have to sit around a table, scratch their heads, and talk amongst themselves.
And if you say that the purpose of the ESOP is to invest in the employer's company, then how does prudence enter at all? I mean, why aren't you just saying, well, it's automatically when they became employees of ADM, they were in an ESOP at Mormon, now they're in ADM, so you convert it to an ADM ESOP.
Well, Your Honor, this is the interesting thing about employer stock cases. You look at Munch and Cupper and those cases. Those are obviously tougher cases. Here we have a company that is viable by their own admission, strong, so we don't really have the close question. But you can, in these cases, have close questions. You can have companies that are failing and that are subject to impending collapse. Now, in that instance...
Right, the other companies really need the workers to be buying stock.
Well, what you have is you have in ERISA a duty of prudence, but you also have a duty to follow the terms of the plan. The plan says, consistent with congressional intent, you're going to acquire and hold and distribute employer stock. Would there be situations in which a fiduciary would be required to sell out of that stock? If you go back to the common law of trusts, when there were trusts that were established for the specific purpose of holding, for example, employer stock. What the courts did there is they said, you know, we're going to put these fiduciaries in an untenable position. On the one hand, they've got to follow the terms of the plan. On the other hand, they need to be prudent. What's the standard? The standard that the courts have sort of focused on is what was what would the settlor have intended? Could a reasonable fiduciary have intended, or could the reasonable fiduciary believe that the settlor would want that fiduciary to hold that stock as it just drops to the floor? The courts have said, no, that can't be right.
Well, who's the settlor in ESOP?
The settlor is the plan sponsor, and in the case of a single employer plan like Mormon and ADM, it's the company.
But then you have, oh, I see, as distinct from the plan, which is the fiduciary.
Right. Now, we talk in our papers about what we think the right standard should be, about, you know, presumption in favor of the fiduciaries, the conflicting, potentially conflicting interests, and so on. I would submit to your honors you don't have to reach that issue. I personally feel that the courts have gotten it right, and I think the common law is right. But I don't think your honors need to reach that decision.
Which issue? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Which is, what is the precise standard? At
you
a
mean because of this conflict?
Yeah.
Between prudence and...
When how imperiled does the company need to be before you sell out? I happen to think that the standards that you see set forth in Munch and Cupper and Wright and the other cases, I think they do get it right. But the answer here is we're nowhere near that. We're talking about ADM that their expert has conceded is financially strong and conceded that there was every expectation that the stock price would eventually rebound. So it really comes back to this. It comes back to two things, the employer stock purpose. And we submit that the plaintiff's theory is directly in conflict with that purpose. The idea of forcing the employer or the fiduciary to sell out of the stock every time a decision is made to terminate the plan is going to mean that in almost every instance you're going to sell the stock. And the reason for that is there's always a delay between termination and distribution. That's just the way it works because employers don't like to distribute their stock until they know that there is a tax qualification letter from the IRS saying you're good to go. Because once the assets are out the door, there's not much you can do.
I thought you said that someone came over from Mormon, wanted to quit, could get his stock converted.
Yes, that was an option that was provided.
But now you're just saying there's about this gap between termination. It's 18 months.
Yes.
You have to wait 18 months?
Well, in this instance, the wait was 18 months. And the reason there was an 18-month wait, let's be clear about what the 18 months is. It's the decision to terminate the plan. Under ERISA, sponsor has to say, I'm terminating the plan. Give notice to the IRS. IRS then reviews and says, yes, you're good to go, you're tax qualified. It is at that point that the distribution is made. That's why we have the 18-month window.
They seem to have under 18 months to compute that answer.
It did in this instance and in the couple
of cases. It's just the case-by-case and ad hoc sort of timing. 18 months is not written in any place.
No, Your Honor, it happens that in Cupper it was the same period of time. In this case, the IRS picked it up on random audit and it took longer. But my point is that if that is viewed as the investment window and you have to sell out every time, which is what the plaintiff's theory is, you will never have a distribution in stock and you can never have the continuation of an employer stock plan. And that is not what the plan sponsor expected, what Congress expected, nor indeed I would submit what the participants expected.
But suppose you have this mouthy person comes from Mormon and he's upset. He knows he's going to be, you know, getting ADM stock. His fortunes are tied to ADM, but he doesn't like the idea that all his interest in the Mormon plan is tied up. What can he do to protect himself before the distribution date?
Before the distribution date? The plan was drafted, again, this is a settlor function, not a...
The Mormon plan.
The Mormon plan was established such that there was not participant direction. Now, I would note, so there was no option to get out of the stock. save, in this case, the ADM, ADM as a plan sponsor in a settlor function decided to allow participants that flexibility. That is, the ability at the end of the 18 months to take the money out.
But not until the end of the 18 months.
Right. Now, Congress has recognized.
So these people were stuck. They had for 18 months their fate depended on the price of the ADM stock.
Right, and that was true, Your Honor. 18 months before the termination, and 18 months before that, and before that. But we have one thing that should be remembered here is that this plan is funded exclusively by the employer. There is no participant contribution. This is a true employer stock plan where the money is coming in by the employer, and the plan is intended that the participants share in the fortunes of the company. And I believe I've explained.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Mr. Sprung, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
I want to touch on a couple of points real quickly. First, the last one that Mr. Severson made, that this plan was funded by the plan sponsor, not by ADM. ADM froze the plan. They made no contributions to the MMC plan. The only contributions were made by MMC, so it would be improper to give ADM credit for providing these participants with benefits.
They're not done out of generosity, so we don't have to worry about
it. Yes. The other thing that Mr. Severson raised, and I'm glad he did, because it's a critical distinction in this case, as opposed to many of the cases that they rely on, and that is that this plan document does not direct that a majority or that all of the assets in the plan be invested in employer securities. In fact, it's plan section, I don't have it at my fingertips and I don't have enough time to dig for it, but it's in the plan, it's in the trust. There is a wide variety of investment vehicles that this plan could have invested in.
Well, what about his point that what you want is for the plan to have, you know, on the first day of the acquisition or within a couple of days, to sell all or a substantial amount of the Mormon stock. Well, there was no Mormon stock. It became ADM.
Mormon
disappeared, yeah. So to sell the ADM stock and create some sort of diversified portfolio or buy fixed income securities or something like that. Is that what you're saying?
Our expert witness who specializes a large
part
of the
job. What are you saying? So
it says that is standard practice in a terminating plan. You never take this type of risk. You get as good a price as you can for the stock. It may take you a month or 2 months to sell it. In other words, you wouldn't go running into the market and
think,
I'm going to dump all my stock. But yes, you have to do something like selling all the stock and putting it into fixed incomes or something that's more conservative and less volatile. You need to do that to protect these participants. Otherwise, you're going to see these swings.
Okay. Well, thank you very much,
thank you,
both counsel.